Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Paul Tooley and Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome to Education Currents. It's good that you're with us today. You know, it's a pretty wild time in our country's history right now, and it's a pretty wild time in education. And one of the things that's kind of gotten buried in this in the rest of the political mess that's going on out there, and economic mess and mess in general, is the education policies that this administration's putting forward, some of the things that they would like to do. And today we thought we would take a look at Race to the Top and see whether or not we think these ideas are good, are going to lead us somewhere, or whether or not they're leading us towards the edge of a larger cliff. President Obama's initiative is called Race to the Top, and it's an idea that we're going to, you know, it's the same, I mean, it's the same song and dance that we've heard since I was a kid coming from Washington, D.C., that we're going to make education a priority. We're going to fix education. We're going to make us a nation of intellects and a nation of educated people, and education, of course, is the Messiah that will save all of us. And part of Obama's idea is that racial inequality stems from a lack of education, a lack of equal access to education, and a lack of education itself. So therefore, they're going to set about to try to remedy the situation by making sure that everybody gets really well educated. Now, right off the bat, I do see a few problems. Number one, you know, as I've been looking at what makes a person educated, and working with I don't know what type, what you would call them. It's more than just poor people. It's people that come from poverty, that are immersed in poverty as a way of life. It's a whole socioeconomic study. I mean, you could look at these people and study their lifestyle that are raised in poverty. And then I look at my grandsons. They're 16 months old now. They're not twins, but they just happened to be born a couple weeks apart. And even at 16 months, you go into their houses, and their houses are basically theirs, not their parents. Not the living rooms are dominated by toy boxes and their toys, and it's clean, it's kept neat and nice, but that's what dominates the living room, the boxes of toys, the books, the bookshelves, all of the children's books. And these two will toddle over and get a book and climb up in your lap in a second. I mean, they love books already. They've been very stimulated to learn, if you will, already. I mean, at this age, they're already developing this great respect for learning, respect for books, curiosity. Their parents take them to places to stimulate their intellectual growth. They'll go to train museums because the boys love trains, and they love tractors, and they love cars, so they'll take them to the county fair, to the animal exhibits, and they'll take them to the tractor exhibits. And so by the time they reach first grade or kindergarten, there's going to be a big difference between them and a child whose parents never even tickled them or never played with them even, or who never did anything to stimulate their curiosity, never took them any place, never had a toy even for them. I've been in these situations. I was in a Title I school, as you know, for a while. So here comes these children in that already don't have a foundation in it. And it goes to what you've talked about the idea of the dendritic growth that is caused early on. And it tends to shut down after the age of 3 or 4 for a while. And it tends to start up again then in early adolescence. And then it shuts down again as far as the plasticness of the brain. Now, all of this Race to the Top doesn't look at that. It's always frustrated me. Education and the educational professionals and the educational gurus out there, and the ones that make money off from education, and the ones that try to control it, and the ones that use it as a political football, never look at the real cause, not the real honest cause of education's problems, which stem from the family. Let's just be honest. It stems from the family. It stems from each family and the way they approach education. Successful families breed successful children. Families of poverty breed children that then go on to make more families of poverty that then go on to make more families of poverty. And that's not, I'm not saying there aren't occasional people that jump out of that. There are. You know, there are people. That's why we go and do it. You know, that's why we go out there as teachers and do it. We never give up on anybody because you never know. But as a whole, as a group, when they do the long-term studies and they look at families of poverty, I'm not saying poor because anybody can be poor at any point in their life. You know, you can lose your money. But when they look at the children of poverty and they trace them back, it's generational. It's generation after generation after generation. So none of that is looked at. Instead, the idea is that we're going to throw money at it, that we're going to, again, do what basically what the Bush administration did. We're going to test them. We're going to prepare them all for college. Now, number one, there's besides what I've just said, we're going to test everybody. We're going to prepare everybody and test them to get them ready for college. That's just an unrealistic idea that everybody should even go to college. Some people don't even want to go to college. Some people look at the cost of college and the cost of going into business for themselves after their high school, and they'd rather go into business for themselves and start earning money. And college itself is not a benchmark of success in this life. It's, you know, it can be, but it's not necessarily a benchmark of success. So there's the first thing is they're not looking at where the source of the problems are. The second thing is now they're coming down saying we're going to prepare everybody for college. And specifically, they're looking at math because, you know, we're worried about the fact that we're such a math illiterate nation. Just because we say we're going to push algebra down into the third grade, they call it guess and check, that doesn't mean the kids are going to learn it. And the thing that absolutely burns my biscuits about it is the fact that if you look at the brain research, I wish brain researchers and educators would get together and get on the same page, because a brain researcher would tell you that the abstract ability of a third grader cannot handle algebra. They can handle it in the guess and check mode, but that's not abstract thinking. That's just, you know, throwing mud at the wall until something sticks. But we push it down and push it down, and we're getting poorer and poorer results. So something's got to give. So we look at that, at their absolute priority, their priorities. And of course, there's a lot of educationese in this top-down stuff. It's a comprehensive approach to education reform. But education's been so reformed, it's worse than religion as far as, you know, reform movements go.
I know that the title of this show is Race to the Top. And as I was thinking about it and doing some of the research myself, you know, the first phrase out there, no child left behind, and now following behind that phrase is race to the top. And I really wonder if it's education that needs to be reformed or something else.
It's something else. It's definitely something else. It's definitely the. I mean, it all centers down on the family. If you'll allow me an analogy to a body, okay. If we know our basic science, the body's organization is cellular. So it starts off, it's organized by cells. The cells then, like cells, group together and form like tissues. And then these like tissues form organs. And then when you take the organs collectively together, you have a body. And in our country, it's the same way. But the cellular structure of our country is the family. And when that's unhealthy, just like in a body, when the cells start to break down, you're in danger of becoming sick and even dying. So as the cellular structure of our nation begins to come apart, they can run around like chickens with their head cut off. They can promise us apple pie in the sky till it's out the wazoo. And of course, they take our money then to try to give us that apple pie in the sky. And as we know, politicians and a certain set of people that, like politicians in this country, think that names somehow move people. Like, I remember I think it was Santa Barbara, California, once the city council got together and decided that in the honor of non-gender bias, they were going to rename all their manhole covers personal access plates. But as if that's going to change anything, you know. And so they changed the name Race to the Top instead of No Child Left Behind, because of course this president wants his own thing to be known for. But it's a lot the same. When you look through it, it's a lot the same. It's based on testing. And
yes, I have the four core education reform areas. One is adopting standards and assessments. The other one's building data systems that measure student growth and success. We know how much we love that.
Oh, that's the same, but that's what's being done now.
And recruiting, developing, and rewarding and retaining effective teachers and principals.
That's what's being done now. It's the same thing. It's just a rehash.
Turning around our lowest achieving schools. And the biggest problem I had as I read through the incentives, schools have quite a few hoops to jump through to get the money to help them achieve these core values.
And the low-achieving schools don't get any.
Right.
So they're in a downward spiral.
But then if you don't get it the first year, then you can apply for it and get it the second year. And yet, when I read some of the articles about it, it's being touted as the greatest thing for the improvement of our educational system that has been, ever.
The problem comes down to, you've got this kind of thing being run from the top, from Washington, D.C. Now, who is in charge, first of all, of judging whether a school is a failing school or not? And what standard do they use? And then what standard do they use to say that a school is great?
Well, the idea, too, is that, and I'm going to quote, it said that Race to the Top will reward states that have demonstrated success in raising student achievement and have the best plans to accelerate their reforms in the future. These states will offer models for others to follow and will spread the best reform ideas across their states and across the country. And, of course, that brings to mind the homeschooling movement, in which all of these students who are being educated by parents, can you believe that? Parents who might not even have gone to college, but across the board, their scores are higher. And it's the same with minorities who are homeschooling.
Yeah.
So it's obviously a great model to follow. How do homeschoolers do it?
Well, I mean, that's pretty easy to start off with. I mean, they talk about the ratio, student-to-teacher ratio, right there.
Okay, student-to-teacher ratio, right. Student-to-teacher right. Ratio.
Second thing is the concern that the educator, in this case, has for the student, as
yes.
a parent, maximum. So there
yes.
you go. The flexibility that that homeschooling has for field trips, for going off on a tangent. If somebody goes outside and they see a chrysalis on the bush hatching, they can stop right there and go right into
yes,
that.
Yes.
The flexibility of that kind of stuff. The concern of the parent for that child. And
so it's a student-centered approach rather than a school system approach.
It's actually a family-centered approach, because you have the educators that are also there that can do all forms of punishment that we can't do in the public sector, hopefully in love, and most of the time I believe it is in love.
Yeah.
There are exceptions, but there's also that, that power that they have public education doesn't have. So there's a number.
Well, and there's many talented principals and teachers that do bring this into.
Well, you do, but you're hampered once I have just the numbers. Once I have 25 kids in my room,
yeah,
just going on a field trip is a major deal, and I had when I worked in the county, I had 25 in my room, and then there were five other fifth grade rooms. So when the fifth grade went on any kind of a field trip, we had to have like six buses and
yes.
all the, we were given packs, literally these packs that were like the size of a small novel that you had to send home and get this checked off and that checked off and the nurse checked off. And I mean, it was just a huge, it just bogged, the whole system bogs down. Whereas if I'm homeschooling, I say, hey kids, jump in the car. We're going out to the aquarium because I want to show you what we've been studying in the science book. And so then you go out and look at the shark and there's a real shark. And, whereas you can't do that. Even in the best of intentions for teachers and principals in public schools, they can't do it. My grandsons love this little thing called Sid the Science Guy. And, of course, now they have this dreamy school where every time Sid
I know, has, I love Sid the Science Guy.
Every time Sid has this itch to do an investigation, somehow the whole school goes along with it, and she's already prepared for it, and she already has everything set up
yeah,
for
it.
Yeah,
they have all their investigative instruments.
And it's just somehow always set up for exactly what he was thinking about at home when he gets there. So, but that's not the real world. And so this kind of thing, if you look, I mean, they wanted to adopt standards and assessments that prepare students for college, but that's not always realistic, and it's not always healthy. We need to look at humans. You know, if you plant pansies. We've been planting these bunches of pansies because my wife sells them. So we'll put these flats of pansies. Well, not every pansy is exactly the same, even though they may be the same color. Some grow bigger, some a little bit smaller, but each one has its place. So when we look at students the same way, and we look at schools the same way, and we say, okay, there's going to be this standard, and if you meet this standard or go above, we reward you. And if you don't meet it, we don't. Well, you know, I mean, my heart goes out to administrators, especially those that care, and teachers, and those that care that are in a Title I area, that the pressure is unbelievable. This whole system does nothing to really boost the lowest achieving school, and it really does nothing to measure success in the real world. So how does education translate to success in the real world? Anybody that's worked with a math book knows, for instance, that 90%, well, that's just off the top of my head, but a large percentage of the math problems are manipulated and have nothing to do with the real world. You know, if you say a train A left the station a half an hour and traveling 50 miles an hour, and then train B left a half an hour later traveling 60 miles an hour, when will they be with each other? That doesn't translate to the real world. And you might be really good at doing something like that. It's sort of like, and I don't mean to offend anybody out there, but it's sort of like Mensa, you know, where you do all these cutesy little puzzles and say your IQ is 200 and some odd, and you sit around and you feel good and puff your chest out, but what does it mean, you know?
Yes.
You know, when I was teaching in school, one of the things that they impressed upon us, and I really agree with this, and that's creating rubrics for students so a student can look at it and say, oh, yeah, I know what I need to do. And, you know, you have these different points and how many points each thing's worth. So the student can look at it and say, oh, I know exactly what to do and how many points I can earn. And as it turns out, the Obama administration has been so gracious to create a rubric for the schools to earn their little dollars that was, of course, taken away from them and sent to the federal government so it can be sent back again to them. And so, Rose, why don't you take us through this?
Okay, I will just give you the gist, and then you can say yay or nay. And, you know, as I'm thinking about this, I really don't know if we need to have an education reform, so to speak, because I look at these geniuses that are coming up that, you know, our millionaires, the young person who did Facebook, and I'm thinking, you know, we're creating some pretty well-educated young people. So anyway, but I know I'm just getting
even sure we need an education department.
Okay, here's the rubric. A, state success factors, and this is worth 125 points. So if a state wants some of this $43 billion, they need to make sure that they have articulated their own reform agenda and that they have LEA's participation in it.
Okay. There we have the 65 points if you can articulate the state's education reform agenda. I wonder if you just said to make smart students. I wonder if that would be good enough in articulating it. I love these kind of fuzzy ideas that you can then use educationese and put in all kinds of wording.
And you know, it really is difficult when you are a school that already has tested high. And yet you have to show that you can go higher.
That's why it's great to be at the bottom.
It is.
Because there's no way to go but up.
So schools, states that are low, this maybe should give you some encouragement.
Plus the fact that the states are low, if they just get a really smart writer, they can write themselves up, you know, probably 100 points in there and get their 65 points.
Yeah, and if you're already a state that's really successful.
But you see, each state measures their own success. So if you just learn how to write your testing right, you can do this.
So that's a big chunk of points. Then the next one is B, standards and assessment. And you need to develop and adopt common standards. And I don't know if those are the core standards that we were talking about that are going to...
Yeah, what this is, that's code for that you better be pretty close to the federal government standards or else. That's what the code is there. That's the interpretation of that.
Yes. I noticed a lot of the stuff when they say voluntary, it doesn't mean voluntary.
Yeah, that's only worth... By the way, in A, there was also two other points that were worth 30 and 30 points. So it was 65, 30, yes, and 30 gave 125.
Yes, I didn't know if we had time to go through all of these points. So I'm hitting the high ones. And then data systems, this is letter C. And each one of these has 3 to 6 points. Letter C, data systems to support instruction. And some of the things that you need to do is fully implement a statewide longitudinal data system and be able to access and use state data and use data to improve instruction.
You know, you should actually get 24 points just for understanding what that means. See? See, if they understand what it means, 24 points, there you go. But, you know, the idea of it's basically collecting information on students and then using it to try to boost student scores. But again, you're into the circular process of making students good at school, but that's not good at life. You know, it can be the same thing, but it's not necessarily. Being good at school and being good at life. You know, in some cases in New York where they've been doing some of this stuff, the teachers, when nobody was looking, and even sometimes with the okay of the principal,
yes,
would leave the answers to the questions on the board.
We did a whole show on cheating teachers.
Yeah.
And there's so much pressure. And if there's billions of dollars at stake.
Yeah. Although the billions of dollars are becoming worth less and less even as we speak.
Yes. Well, the next one, letter D, is great teachers and leaders.
Oh, I love this one. Great teachers and leaders. Now, how do you identify what a great teacher and leader is? Well, obviously, it's going to be a teacher or a leader that helps support the agenda of the administration,
right,
and this agenda. So whoever's the best bootlegger is going to become a great teacher and leader. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't great teachers out there, but oftentimes great teachers and great leaders are going against the grain and they're counted as poor,
yes,
and they're axed,
yes,
and kicked out and cut and fired and anywhere else they can do to get rid of them.
Yes.
But to be, in the case of this, to be a great teacher and leader would mean that you'd have some boot black on your tongue and then you would be, you'd get your points.
Yeah. And that's very discouraging to the great teachers and leaders. But have courage, because God has placed you where He has, and sometimes you just need to buck the system and be an advocate for that student in your classroom.
You may get kicked out, but buck it anyway.
Yes. We are here. We're standing right here behind you,
yes,
100%.
We'll help you fill out your unemployment forms.
Oh, that's not funny. You know, this Race to the Top also has, it has a feeling of, you know, the state itself has a grant. People who all they do is write for grants. And so essentially this is grant money. And it adds another layer of bureaucracy onto an already suffocating system.
And another thing that worries me, too, is do you know how deep we are in debt as a nation? So where does $4.35 billion come from? Where are we getting this money from? You know, I think every American needs to ask that. Where is education, the public education sector, especially the federal government, where is it getting these goodies to hand to us when it's broke? It is more than broke. It's trillions of dollars in debt. So where is it getting the $4.35 billion to give out? Where's it getting that money from?
Well, folks, we hope that this show has caused you to pause and think about the education of your young people and the young people of our nation. Education Currents is a production of MRG Media Ministries, and we would thank you, Paul, and for being a wonderful host of this show. And we hope that you go to educationcurrents.com. And we look forward to being with you again next week. Bye.